Will I get more free love? That's the public question of Jean Carn, and it's a prelude to the secret work of the popular novelist Toni Morrison.
Well, I started writing not for publication and not seriously. That is, it was serious work, but it was private, and it was a thing for me to do that was all my own. Many women write sort of secretly, you know, or used to more than they do now. At any rate, I had begun to write a story about a little black girl who wanted blue eyes, because I remembered a girl telling me that once when I was 12, and saying that she had prayed every night for 2 years for blue eyes. And that's all that happened, except my astonishment at that time. And later in life, I just remember wondering what on earth could have happened to her, or happened to all of us, that would make us, after a dozen years, want to be something entirely different, and who the people were who were responsible for making her think that was an improvement.
Over a decade ago, I was invited to act as music director for a show to be called In White America. It was a surprising look at black history, starring Moses Gunn and Gloria Foster. It was an aberration at the time, an anomaly. Well, since then, there have been many such, and our perspective has changed. And Toni Morrison was even hired as editor for Random House. While there, she helped create The Black Book, the autobiography of Angela Davis, and many others. And then, for Alfred Knopf, which is now a part of Random House, Toni Morrison created her own bestsellers, The Bluest Eyes, Sula, and Song of Solomon. Serenely reflecting on her own past and the peculiar history of her people, Toni Morrison told our Connie Goldman more about her own career.
So when I was in a place where I could not or didn't have a lot of close friends, I sort of wrote as a way of talking. And after I had done that, and after it had been published, after I had actually finished it, it just became a way of life for me. That is, I never wanted to be without something that I was writing. Each one of the books has been a kind of idea that generates in the beginning, and then I have to find the characters to express the ideas or manifest them. And after I'd finished Sula, and I had, in that book, I thought exhausted as much as I could about the relationship of women to each other. And then I got interested in men as a group. I got interested in writing a story about how to live intensely and well in this world with all of the problems of identity and crisis. And it seemed to me that kind of book needed men as main characters, because there were enormous possibilities of breaking out for them, but there were enormous responsibilities of masculinity that they had to endure.
In one very simple sense, the book Song of Solomon is like that little girl wanting to change her identity, because it is a story of a black person wanting to leave the blackness that he didn't want to identify with.
Certainly finding out who you are. The main character is comfortable and coddled, self-centered. He's in the middle class. His father is an acquisitive man and has taught him how to own things and how to let those things own other things. All around him are black people of other persuasions who live quite differently, some eccentric, some not. But life has taken hold of them in some way, and they have had to confront real life in terms of being black. And he escapes that requirement for a long time, and until it is impossible any longer for him to ignore it. And long after he should have been an adult, he learns how to become one. And part of it had to do with his search for what he believed was simply gold, but turns out to be a search for himself, his ancestors, his past, the past, which teaches him how to live in the world.
What is personal in this book for you? what of the people that we meet in this book?
Oh, it's more of a flavor than anything that's factual. Most of my fiction is straight-up fiction. I use bits and pieces of things. There is a song in my family, which I always thought was just a lovely little child's song, but in fact, as I knew many years ago, was a record of the family, the generations. And the first line of it is, "Green, the only son of Solomon." And Green was the firstborn son of my grandfather. And I used that line to begin a song, which I made up, for the key to the main character's discovery of who his people were. And there are certain atmospheres, you know, barbershop atmospheres, which I tried to remember from my own very peripheral acquaintance with them, men on the streets, certain kinds of women. They are fictional characters, but they begin somewhere.
Your books are so visual. When you write, how visual is your
perception?
Very. Is it almost like you having a silent movie going in your head and then, then you write the words to go with it?
Well, sometimes it is the colors. Sometimes it's the language. Once I remember in another book, in Sula, having a man come to see his wife that he hasn't seen in a long time. And they have a little conversation, and he leaves her, walks out the door. The woman doesn't know quite what to feel about him. Shall she hate him? Does she, is he indifferent to him? And so on. And he walks down the steps. And the way I had originally written it, he jumped into a pea-green Model T Ford and hit the horn, and it said, "Ooga, ooga," and he drove away. And when she heard that sound, then she knew what she felt, and she hated him. Well, after I'd written it, and I liked it a lot, my editor said, but there were no cars at that time, so I had to change it. So I took the car out, and I had a woman waiting for him outside. And he goes down the stairs toward her, and the woman laughs, a big city laugh, or sort of a Chicago laugh. And then the woman knows what to feel. She hates him. But the important thing was that this woman had on a pea-green dress. So it was very important in my mind that whatever he was walking toward was that color. Now, sometimes, as in Song of Solomon, there's a phrase that opens it up for me for a character. When Milkman, the hero's mother, is explaining to him what he felt were terrible things she had done to him when he was a little boy, and he accuses her of having nursed him so long, and he makes it sound as though it were an obscene act on her part, and she looks at him and she says, "And I also prayed for you, and what harm did I ever do you? On my knees." And when she said that line, it was, I fell in love with her then. It was everything about her revolved around that one sentence to me then, because it is that curious combination of a mother and a child. When she says, "What harm have I ever done you on my knees?" she's also saying, not only I am the only person in the world who will always wish you well, whatever I do, whatever kind of human being I turn out to be, I wish you well. But she's also giving him a little layer of guilt on my knees. And that is the mother-child sort of committed love that has its circle of guilt for the child. And it was out of that sentence that she was built.
The book has so much passion and power. Where did you put all that dynamite when you had to put it away and go to work, because you have a full-time job and you have children to take care of and your writing can't go on all the time? How difficult was it for you to shelve it and then recreate it again?
It is difficult. It's like you carry a box around inside and you have to shut the lid, and it makes other things seem remote. It's fortunate that children never let that operate. Their demands are instant, and so that you have to always be on top for them. But there were times when I was a little vague about whatever I was doing at the moment in another demanding situation. It's hard, and it's not always possible. But with a little practice, you just have to exercise as much effort and will and concentration as you can. Maybe I'm wrong about it. Maybe something else happens. But I am thrilled to death that this book is receiving much more attention than the other two ever did, and also that the possibilities of expanding the readership is great. But for me, the ideal thing will be when one day there is a season, a publishing season, in which there are six or seven first-rate, fantastic books by black writers, and my competition as a writer will be with them. And people will have these incredible choices, not of one black writer in the fall, one more black writer, you know, in that sort of very infrequent publication. But when it is as common as starlight.
Now that's something that we and novelist Toni Morrison can eagerly anticipate.